Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Coming up later on in the show, we hear about what some cattle ranchers are going through in Colorado. A lot of the issues they're facing there are similar to what our cattle ranchers are facing as well. But we start today. Taylor Chalstrom is kicking us off with a preview of the upcoming Crop Consultant Conference.
Hi, this is Taylor Chalstrom with the My Ag Life Daily News Report. We're here with Jesse Cantor with the UCCE Small Farms and Specialty Crops Program in Fresno County. Jesse is going to be one of our panelists at the upcoming Crop Consultant Conference. She's going to be talking about cover crops in California and what we know about them up to this point. Jesse, would you mind giving a short little description about kind of what your presentation will be about in the coming months?
Yeah, definitely. So as you mentioned, it'll be kind of a broad overview of cover cropping in California and some of the latest research on cover crops, and also just some of the benefits that cover crops can provide for both growers and for the environment, and how they can be adopted in systems within California. I think a lot of the cover crop research that has historically been done comes out of the Midwest. And so there's been a lot of work recently to adapt this type of system to how we grow in California. So I'll be presenting broadly on things that have been found lately.
Okay. And, you know, what is the importance of consultants coming to this conference and learning about a subject like this, you know, cover crops in California?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think, again, it's become almost like a buzzword these days. Like, everyone seems to be talking about cover crops, but I think really equipping consultants and other technical assistance providers with tools and resources and just advice on what to tell growers and where to go, I think that's really important. And again, like how it can be adapted here versus some of the resources that might be online that aren't as relevant to California.
Just one last question here. Do you think you'll be covering kind of any misconceptions around cover crops, you know, that type of thing? Is that going to be an important subject during your presentation?
Definitely. Yeah, I think that's a big one, especially when it comes to getting growers to adopt a certain practice. And I know like there are different misconceptions around cover crops and frost and different things like that. So we will be talking about that research that has been done on topics such as that, and either affirming or debunking some of those misconceptions about cover crops.
Okay, perfect, Jesse. Thank you for that. And we will see you at the 2021 Crop Consultant Conference on September 16th and 17th.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
Thanks, Taylor. Our news brief is up next. We will be right back.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns live in person on September 16th and 17th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this must-attend conference features 2 days of educational seminars, a live trade show, and honorariums and scholarships given by Western CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Hear the top experts in their field speak on pest management, artificial intelligence and new technologies, as well as the latest on soil health, nitrogen, and irrigation management. DPR and CCA credits will be available over the 2 days. For more information on credits, topics, and registration, visit progressivecrop.com/conference. Agromiora Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromiora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Rootpack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromiora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Rootpack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today.
Here's your news brief for today. A lack of semiconductor chips is expected to impact agriculture into next year. Ashley Davenport shares more.
A shortage of semiconductor chips has been making the news in the automotive industry for months. Instead of full lots of vehicles waiting for that all-important chip, it's having a different impact on ag equipment. Matt Ramage, Vice President of Sales for Hudson Incorporated, said John Deere Corporate has been anticipating this since the beginning of the year. When those inklings first started, Hudson and other Deere dealers decided they should prepare.
We were being told that some of our 2021 year model equipment would not be shipped with receivers. So it all started with GPS receivers. And we thought, oh, no problem. All of our customers have two or three extra GPS receivers. This is not going to be a big deal. But at the same time, we've got customers that we're trying to convert from different brands. And we wanted to provide the same creature comforts that all customers have.
This spring, they went to their customers to ask them to trade out of their extra receivers. Those dealers said that they would sell them new receivers before harvest in mid-July or early August.
We had a lot of customers say, hey, we would love to help. We traded for a lot of receivers. And then as time went on, it wasn't just receivers that were in a shortage situation.
Then Ramage was notified that newer units with extended monitors would not be shipped.
By the time we got to May, we were notified by John Deere, by the manufacturer, that all of our orders for this type of technology, those orders, although they were sourced and showing a delivery date, they would become unsourced because the supply chain just would not allow them to supply them to us.
Now some Deere dealers, like Hudson, owe their customers receivers. There's a whole team of people on Facebook, Craigslist, and are combing through classifieds to try and find this technology.
We've been able to acquire probably 10 or 15 displays and 10 or 15 receivers. But as far as in the scope of Hudson Incorporated and the 30 stores now across Tennessee, Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, and Michigan, we aren't even scratching the surface of what we're going to need by next spring, much less by this harvest season.
Ramage says that this fall, there's going to be customers that will have to revert to the dark ages.
We will have customers that will have to operate combines without collecting yield data. They will not have the GPS technology to recognize where they are in the field, and therefore any yield data that they collect is just a mass input type yield data. The combine will still tell you this is how much I'm seeing in yield, but without a geospatial reference, there won't be a yield map.
And it's not just the semiconductor chips that are in short supply. The demand for the raw materials are in high demand as well. Ramage says that Deere is doing all they can to try and get product supplied to dealers, but that has proven difficult. He says he doesn't expect to see a recovery in this market before next summer. I'm Ashley Davenport.
There's high demand right now for cattle hides. In fact, in addition to the value of a beef carcass and the beef cuts that are typically generated from it, there's a value of other parts of that carcass that are termed drop credit. This includes the value of hide, head, organs, and blood. While drop credits have been depressed in recent years, Caitlin McCulloch of the Livestock Market Information Center says the value has been trending higher in recent months, especially for the hide.
USDA AMS comes up with a byproduct value based on different organ meats and variety meats, as well as hide values, and assigns a weight to it per 100 pounds to come up with that value. And that is approaching $13 a hundredweight, which is the highest value it's seen since about 2015. And one of the biggest drivers has been the hide value.
She says the reasoning behind the increase is not exactly clear, but it could be caused by a number of things.
And we've been talking for a long time about the decline in the leather industry, this seemingly lack of preference towards leather, both globally and in the U.S. We've seen cars move away from that to some extent in sneakers. We're wondering now if there's a resurgence in interest. Have consumer preferences actually changed, or is it because everyone went out and bought a new car in 2021 and late 2020? Is that part of this? Is it more of a manufacturing issue?
She says exports for 2021 are also a bright spot in the market.
Exports really have not done well since about those high values in 2014, and it really seemed like that industry was not going to come back. Now, if we look at cumulative year-to-date exports, whole hides are up about 62%. That's January to May data over 2020. But if we compare that to May of 2019, it's about 50%. So still very strong numbers we're looking at on those whole hide values.
She adds it's also important to remember that a limiting factor caused by the pandemic is available labor to fabricate carcass parts into variety meats that can be shipped to the international market. In a flurry of activity ahead of the August recess, the House of Representatives will consider appropriation bills this week, including the Agriculture Spending Bill. The process began Monday with the House Rules Committee. The 2022 Agriculture Spending Bill provides discretionary funding of $26.5 billion. That's an increase of $2.8 billion, or 12% above 2021. In total, the bill includes $196.7 billion for both discretionary programs funded on an annual basis and mandatory programs, such as the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. The bill is part of a package of seven total spending bills being considered this week in the House, including labor, energy, financial services, interior, military, and transportation. The House Agriculture Committee also scheduled a hearing Tuesday on the 2020 WIP Plus Reauthorization Act, expanding the Wildfire and Hurricane Indemnity Program Plus. Meanwhile, the Senate looks to finalize its infrastructure package this week, ahead of the August recess as well. Consumer demand for lamb increased considerably in 2020. While all meat sales grew as more meals were consumed at home, lamb sales grew at a larger percentage than total meat sales overall. That according to the American Lamb Board's latest U.S. retail sales report. The 2021 first quarter report assesses the American lamb market by comparing 4-week, 12-week, and 52-week intervals to 1 year prior. Last year saw a 24.7% increase in lamb dollar sales from 2019 and a 17.7% increase in pounds sold from 2019. That's our news for today. We will be right back.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Welcome back. I'm a member of the National Association of Farm Broadcasters, and a fellow association member, Brian Almar of The Barn, recently interviewed Bill Hamrick, Chief Executive Officer of the Colorado Livestock Association, and they talked about issues that cattle ranchers are seeing there, many of them parallel to issues California's cattle ranchers face, including things like drought and fee increases. Brian is sharing his interview with us.
Joining the Colorado Ag News Network and Farmcast Radio at this time is the Chief Executive Officer of the Colorado Livestock Association, Bill Hamrick. Bill, welcome back inside the barn. We got some big news to announce as far as you announced your retirement last week. But before we get to that, you guys also just had your annual meeting June 2nd and 3rd at the Doubletree Hotel in Greeley. Kind of give us a recap and some of the high points of that, because you had some amazing speakers.
We did, Brian. I think for me, one of the highlights is it was an opportunity to get everybody back together face-to-face. And I think that if you kind of look at our numbers, we actually had four more registrants than we did at the annual meeting in 2019. So we took that as a real indication that people were wanting to get back together, actually look somebody in the eye and shake their hand and kind of do some catching up. So overall, That was a very positive thing from our point of view. You mentioned our speakers, and yes, we did. Unfortunately, at least for one of our speakers, Frank Mittler from Cal Davis, he at the last minute was unable to travel here personally, so we had to do him virtually, which was overall our first experience in the virtual world, but it went well. We had some good technical people involved there at the hotel, and it came across very well. But again, it would have been much better if we could have had him in person. So beyond that, everybody else did appear in person on stage, and we had a great panel discussion, kind of just a round-robin kind of dialogue amongst Jordan Levy, Amanda Radke from South Dakota, Keith Bell from CSU, and Jennifer, and I apologize, I don't remember her last name, from the Colorado Sun. So we covered the waterfront when it came to topics there, and then we had Chris Brown with the Common Sense Institute there at the end of the first day, kind of talking about the future of things in Colorado, specifically from an economic standpoint. And Brian, you mentioned a little bit ago fees and taxes. I think they are close to concluding a study of all of that and what the shakeout's going to be from the legislative action that was taken this year and what that's going to mean, you know, from a tax fee standpoint going down the road. So it was a great event. We also offered an opportunity for those who, for whatever reason, couldn't or didn't want to travel to Greeley and be in a face-to-face deal. We did offer a virtual experience there so people could kind of listen in on what they wanted to hear. And then in addition to all of that, we did record it. So we've had people since that time that have gone back and listened to the discussion that took place. So thanks for asking. A great event. And we're hoping that the 2020 experience, where a lot of us had to cancel our annual meetings and conventions, are looking forward to that being in the rearview mirror, and we can start to look getting back to normal, whatever that's going to be in the years to come.
By the way, the reporter's name for the Colorado Sun is Jennifer Brown. Just wanted to clarify that for you. You guys also had the Top Choice Awards, too, and a state of the CLA Association itself. Those Top Choice Awards, Dr. Keith Rohr.
Yep. Keith, obviously, for those who knew and worked with him, there as a state vet, I think we were very, very fortunate in Colorado to have him in that position for as long as he was there. You know, whether it was TB or brucellosis or other animal health issues, he always brought a very reasoned approach to the table. And he wasn't just going to roll over and let you do what you wanted to do, but if you were willing to kind of bend and negotiate, he was willing to get there. And I'll never forget the Yellowstone issue up there with the brucellosis. He made that work by enacting an executive order right there as the fall run started. Otherwise, a lot of those cattle were not going to be able to move to Colorado, and credit to Dr. Rohr for making that happen. And I think there are other examples of his willingness to cooperate with industry as well. So we think he was a very worthy candidate. Our other candidate, Dr. Bernie Rollin from CSU, who has retired, and so the things that he's done and his ability to kind of open up lines of communication with some of the animal activist groups, Brian, has really proven to be valuable in recent years. So his presence is going to be missed. But certainly we did benefit greatly from his involvement in our various animal activist issues in the years past.
You can check out the 2021 Colorado Livestock Association's Top Choice Award honorees online inside the barn, or go to coloradolivestock.org. Also wanted to mention, you guys recognize the 2020 CLA Safe Farm Award winners, Wickstrom Incorporated Orchard, my neighbors just to the south, Christensen Brothers Incorporated of Weldona, also neighbors to the south, McClary Farms Incorporated of Sedgwick, Dvorak Feeders, and also Penny Family Farms of Burlington, and Bamford Feed Yard in Haxton. Congratulations to the Safe Farm Award recipients. Anything you want to mention about them?
I think they are prime examples of if you are truly committed to keeping your employees safe. Those folks that you just mentioned there, Brian, are great examples of that. They're people that, you know, the old saying is that your employees are your most valuable resource. Those folks there are a great example of that. They wear that right on their cuff, and those awards that you mentioned are proof that they have they've done an exemplary job in keeping their employees safe, and we hope they continue to do so in the future.
And I know you guys also had your board of directors meeting at the annual meeting. Anything out of that that you wanted to make mention of?
I think, and I'm not trying to be funny here, but I think President Weinrich had a real challenge in putting together his addressing the State of the Union, the association, because if you look back in 2020, Brian, you know, typically we would have had a number of face-to-face meetings. Well, obviously, that kind of thing didn't take place in 2020. And so, you know, trying to first of all, ramp up in the virtual world and have good, robust discussions about whatever topics were, it was a bit of a challenge because, and I don't mean to be funny about this either, but early on in that experience, you know, people wouldn't turn their cameras on. So you didn't have that kind of that face-to-face reaction. So we basically just kind of took care of the essential things from a governance standpoint. And so, you know, yes, he had some things to talk about, like the PAWS initiative and some of the other legislative pieces, the Farmers' Bill of Rights, Senate Bill 87. But bottom line, I think he was put at a disadvantage compared to some of his predecessors who, because we could travel and do things face-to-face, at least in his term for the past year, his experience there was greatly reduced. So we're looking forward to the final year of his two-year term, which will be over next June, and hopefully because we can get back face-to-face, we're going to have a better year for him than we did a year ago.
My guest once again is Bill Hamrick, the Chief Executive Officer of the Cotter Livestock Association, who just recently announced that he would be stepping down in mid-2022 from his position. Bill, as you take a look back over your 20 years of service, what are some of the big things that come to mind for you?
A couple of things, Brian. First of all, and not necessarily in any order of importance, but I think when CLA started back in 1998, its charge at that time was to be engaged in a collaborative manner in anything that related to environmental regulation. And certainly that far back, at that time, we were most engaged with water quality, to some degree water quantity, but more the quality aspects. Now, in that period of time since 1998, we've kind of matured the water regulations in Colorado, and not that they're done forever, but we've kind of morphed or moved off into more air-related issues here in the last 5 to 10 years, and I think that's going to continue to be front and center as we go forward. So we've had a place at the table from the very beginning, and I think we've developed a great relationship. Obviously, the folks down there that regulate our livestock operations here in Colorado from an environmental standpoint, they don't turn their head, they don't look the other way. We are expected and required to comply with all regulations, but the positive part of that is we've been able to engage with those regulators in the development of those regulations. So it makes it easier. It's something that you can live with today. A number of years ago, I had a cattle feeder member tell me that you are not going to stop the regulatory creep. And his only ask of CLA was, is just slow it down enough that I can keep up. And I think, Brian, since 1998, we've done a great job of doing that. So that would be number one. I guess, secondly, I think just being involved in the animal welfare issue, I look back and I think, you know, it's always been there. Hasn't been there to the degree that this Initiative 16 or the PAWS initiative was this year, which was just absolutely ridiculous. But we've always been dealing with some type of an animal welfare-related issue, and again, I think we've been at the table. I think our producers, although they There's been things they haven't liked. Again, we've avoided some of the more onerous ones. Previously, I mentioned Dr. Rowland and his involvement with us in that area. So I guess if I had to pick a couple, Brian, those would be the two things.
You bet. Of course, that Initiative 16 Pause Act, CLA joined the other ag organizations in fighting Initiative 16, and the Colorado Supreme Court ruled that it was more than one issue title. So it was 7-0. That was a great decision for agriculture. Any rumblings? Are you hearing anything about possibly another one coming on that will exclude horses, dogs, and cats? Because if that happens, we're in big trouble.
Well, you know, I think, yes. And at this point, Brian, I think it's simply rumor. It remains to be seen. Will they try again for something on the 2022 ballot? But if I could digress just a minute, I don't recall a time since I've been here, Brian, where agriculture in the past year has come together the way they have. And just to mention a couple, one of them being this Initiative 16. The Coloradoans for Animal Care, I think specifically related to an animal welfare issue, I have never been witness to the kind of collaboration that came out of that effort there. And people coming to the table, speaking with one voice. You know, agriculture sometimes typically we get a little convoluted in our messaging, but I think it was crystal clear through that Coloradoans for Animal Care initiative that we were speaking with one voice. And consequently, we developed a very broad coalition of folks that were in opposition to that. It wasn't just about cows and pigs. So
you bet.
The other one is Senate Bill 87. And again, I think for this past year, this is a great example of, yes, we didn't get everything we wanted. It still is not a good piece of legislation that's going to have long-term negative implications. But hopefully we can work through those. But it wasn't just about livestock in this issue. It was about fruits and vegetables and crops. So I think we'd be remiss if all of us who were involved in those two issues, at least this past year, if we didn't hold on going into the future, the benefit of working together, then shame on us.
We're going to take a quick sponsor break. We will be right back.
The California Walnut Board and Commission provides value to the California walnut industry by working together with growers and handlers to advance the industry. Together, the California Walnut Board and Commission are helping to protect, develop, and grow California walnuts domestically and internationally. The California Walnut Board provides funding and strategic direction on walnut production and post-harvest research designed to help support the industry and promote California walnuts. To learn more, visit our website at walnuts.org. Together we grow. Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Welcome back. We continue now with Brian Ulmer speaking with Bill Hamrick of the Colorado Livestock Association.
Yeah, Initiative 16 and Senate Bill 87 sure galvanized the efforts. If folks want to learn more about what they can do to help to fight against whatever's next coming against agriculture, you can go to coloradansforanimalcare.com and even make a donation there as well. Back to your retirement, I also understand you were very instrumental in establishing a culture of financial stewardship and advancing the growth of the Industry Preservation Fund. Tell us more about that.
A couple things there about that. In this day and age that we live in, there are continual challenges. So, again, kind of going back to our mission and vision and things relative to regulation and legislation, you know, we are not experts at everything every day. So there are times when we have to reach out to an expert to provide some testimony relative to a piece of legislation or a proposed regulation. And so going back to the beginning, it was felt that we needed to put together a fund that when we had these kind of challenges that we would have the financial resources to go acquire the expert testimony or witness that we would need. And so that's how the Industry Preservation Fund came about. Obviously, in getting some growth and development in that, in the financial resources there, we've had to pay very close attention to our expense side of the ledger and to a degree to the income side as well. And I think that with the help of the board of directors, the staff here at CLA, we've been able to foster that kind of a culture here that, you know, we all might have our wish list of things that we would like to have or would like to do. But let's really keep our eye on the ball about what we are all about. I think we've done that, and I think the financial culture, if you will, has helped maintain that as we've spent the last 20 years working on it.
I know you still got almost another year yet before your full retirement, but is there anything left on the table right now that you hope that you can accomplish in the next 10, 11 months or the next executive director will be able to accomplish?
As far as myself is concerned, just a little background. For a number of years while I was here, kind of ashamed to admit it, we did not have a succession plan. And, of course, as I started thinking about, you know, what my future might look like here, I did approach the board and encourage them to spend some time and effort and put together a plan from both a planned departure standpoint as well as an emergency situation. So that took the better part of a year to put together. It was vetted a number of times, tweaked, and I'm really proud to say that I think that the group that worked on that, Brian, has come up with a very functional plan, and I think it will prove to be very valuable as that committee moves forward in choosing my successor. So, I think that if I had one hope and wish, is that it, coupled with that plan, that the next person that fills this position here at CLA will be someone who, be it he or she, that will carry on the vision here. Obviously, nothing is forever. And, you know, people have asked me, Brian, well, what are you going to do, or why do you think it's time? And at the top of my list is why I think it's time. It is that, again, things change. The world we're living in today is different, and I don't want to think of myself as someone who doesn't want to change or is unwilling to change, but I think that just someone with a new vision, a new view of the world, if you will, you know, maybe as simple as maybe understanding in the real world the impact that social media has upon our ability to reach out to people and share our message. And that's really not my forte. Obviously, we are fortunate today to have a communication director who does that. But I think that the person that leads this organization from the CEO position needs to have that appreciation and understanding as well. So it would be my hope that I don't think this outfit wants another Bill Hamrick. I think they need to kind of go a different direction, and hopefully we have people on this selection committee that will make that choice.
So I'm going to ask the million-dollar question. What are you most looking forward to in retirement? Spending time with your family? Traveling? What?
Gosh, Brian, I guess family. I've got four grandsons, and they are all starting to grow up. The oldest one, you know, he's now playing baseball. One of them is he's in 4-H for the first time this year. We are going to make the trek to Buffalo, Wyoming for the swine show during the Johnson County Fair and Rodeo there in early August. And so I would hope that now that I'm going to have some time to see them grow up and see what they're going to be interested in. That's kind of an exciting thing for me. Traveling, yeah, there's a lot of places in this country. I don't have to go abroad, Brian. A lot of places here that I've never been that are kind of on my bucket list. And probably, I don't know, have any idea what this might look like. I can't imagine that I'm just going to sit around the house and watch Westerns all day. So hopefully I will find some other thing to keep me busy. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
How about political aspirations, maybe?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Thank you for asking, but that's an affirmative no.
Okay. Well, I was hoping it was a maybe. You know, we need people that have a lot of ag experience in these positions at the state legislature or back in Congress, for that matter. Chief Executive Officer Bill Hamrick is my guest. In this last segment, Bill, I want to ask you, you've had some time here in the last week or so to attend several meetings. Last Wednesday, July 14th, you attended the monthly meeting of the Colorado Agricultural Commission. Any updates from that meeting you want to make mention of?
You know, it was only an hour-long meeting, Brian, but the part that was most interesting to me is they're at the end of the meeting, which is a routine thing. They go around and ask each one of the commissioners kind of what's going on in your area of the state. And it was very interesting, and you and I talked about this a little earlier. There were people that sit on that commission that come from a part of Colorado that is experiencing extreme drought. But on the other hand, there's a commissioner on there who, and I'm not quoting him here, probably pieces and parts of north and northeastern Colorado look as good as they can for this time of year. The peach crop, last year it was a total wipeout. This year sounds like they're having a great crop, although the gentleman there that is in the peach producing business said it's kind of weird this year that some of the trees have great big peaches on them, and a tree right next to it might have a smaller size peach. I'm not a peach raising guy, so I'm probably starting to talk above my pay grade here. But I thought that was very interesting, that at least from a climate or weather standpoint, that in a given year there could be that much diversity in Colorado, but it's real.
And on Thursday, July 15th, you and other members of the Colorado Ag Water Alliance met to discuss plans for the Ag Water Summit and an update for the Colorado Water Plan. Anything you want to make mention of there?
I would just say that coming up later this year in Winter Park, Colorado, the Colorado Ag Water Alliance is going to have our summit, and they are just now in the process of really bringing the speaker program together, the moderators. So as that gets closer, we'll be pushing out here, and hopefully others, members of the COBWA, will do the same. If you're not doing anything in early December, plan on being in Winter Park, Colorado. The overarching theme of this year's summit is going to be what can we do about ag water storage? And I think after we've coming off of this year and previous years, that is something that agriculture and Colorado, I think Colorado needs to look at. Why should we be letting our water run down the river? So kind of a long story there, but that's we're looking forward to the summit coming up later this year.
You bet, and I encourage folks to check out the Colorado Sun today. Speaking of water, they're diverting Blue Mesa Reservoir, for instance, out to Lake Powell to make sure that the hydropower plant continues to operate. So there's a lot of Colorado water heading out of state, that's for sure. And I hope COBWA folks, Greg Peterson and everybody, will get a hold of me and hopefully get an interview about that upcoming COBWA meeting in Winter Park later on this year. This week, you're attending a monthly meeting for the Hemp Feed Coalition Production Animals Work Group. Boy, that's quite the title and quite the subject matter. Anything there you wanted to make mention of ahead of the meeting?
Brian, you were well aware of all of the interest about hemp in Colorado, and I think I probably have been part of this group for 4 or 5 years, and as you can tell by the title, the focus of this particular group is specifically the use of hemp in cattle feed and maybe some of the hemp co-products, such as meal or cake. looking at it as a protein source. And we continue to meet monthly, but I think it's become increasingly frustrating for those of us that partake in that monthly meeting, is trying to get it, get the research done, get FDA to consider that research and allow hemp and hemp byproducts to be used in animal feed. And as it started out, the real interest in the beginning, I think from the livestock point of view, was the roughage end of it. But even today, you still, FDA says you cannot feed it to food animals. So we're not giving up. We continue to look for grants and so forth to fund research. Kate State is doing some great toxicology work on those products. So it's an agonizingly slow process, but I think if we stay with it one of these days, it'll become an additional feed source for food animal livestock.
I look forward to visiting with you about that down the road. Earlier you mentioned Senate Bill 2187. You've got a meeting coming up with the Ag Labor Coalition, so I assume that the CLA has been an active member of this as this law, or once was a bill, now a law, goes into effect, and they try to figure out where things stand there.
Well, I would say, Brian, that, again, this has been a fantastic collaborative effort and for all of Ag. And after the session was over, we're now beginning into the next phase, if you will. And probably the most significant phase, in my opinion, is going to be the rulemaking hearing that was permitted through some negotiations in the original legislation. We'll have a rulemaking hearing at the Department of Labor coming up in October. This is where we will get a chance to get another bite at the apple, if you will, relative to some overtime things and short-handle hose, some, you know, water and shade and things like that. So we're regrouping here after a little respite. Everybody catch their breath, and we're coming back together this week to say, okay, what are the definite next steps? So,
yeah, it's a big law. It was a big law as they were debating it down at the state capitol during the legislative process, and it's got a lot of ramifications, some good, some bad. We'll just have to see how things go, and I'm glad the CLA and other members of the ag organizations are out there and a part of this as they get ready for the rulemaking process. I know we've covered quite a bit, Bill, but anything else you wanted to mention or something we might have missed?
Brian, I think you had a great list there, so thank you for the opportunity.
You bet, and I wish you the best in retirement. Of course, that's still a few months off, so look forward to working with you until then, and whoever your successor is, and working with the CLA through the years. It's been a pleasure, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you, Brian, and have a great rest of your summer.
Thanks to my guest, Bill Hamrick, Chief Executive Officer of the Colorado Livestock Association, for joining me right here inside the barn.
Thank you again to Brian Ulmer for sharing that interview with us. That topic was suggested by a listener. If you have a topic that you'd like to hear about, send me an email to sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. From the JCS Marketing Crew, thanks for listening.